Hello, everyone, and welcome back. Today is Friday, December 17th, 2010. My name is Angela Walton-Raji, and this is the African Roots Podcast. Remember, you can always reach me at africanrootspodcast@gmail.com. How is everybody? Happy holidays, compliments of the season, as it's often said. And I hope everyone is having a good week, has had a good week. It's already Friday. And I hope that your plans for the holidays are coming along well. Well, quite a few things to talk about today. Not a lot of events coming up in the next couple of weeks. Right now, we're in a holiday mode, and you know, it's always a great time of the year, a time for me to just sort of reflect on lots of things that have happened, both bad and good. Certainly, this has been a great year for me. Genealogically, I've had a chance to speak all over the country. In fact, I was in Nevada twice this year, had a chance to go to Oklahoma and Arkansas a couple of times, which is really kind of neat as well. Was in Alabama, attended a wonderful institute, and I'm hopefully going to be able to go back again, and just so many things to look forward to. And I've been managing to work very hard, not just in terms of keeping up my podcasts, but working on my blogs, which have just opened all kinds of wonderful doors for me, and it's just been a great experience. A lot of things, though, have been going on anyway that have gotten me a bit energized and have gotten others energized as well, and I may as well just sort of jump right into them. One, of course, was a surprising nomination that came. I was very honored to have recently been honored as a nominee for the Family Tree Magazine Top 40 Blogs of the Year. There's an opportunity if you're interested. I have a link for you to my blog. I was excited about that. And just being nominated is the honor. And I was just really, really happy about that. And there's still time to vote. But what was really good for me was the exposure that I got to other bloggers. And it's something, again, that's still relatively new experience for me, certainly, you know, 2 years or so. But I had a chance to look at some incredible, incredible sites. I'm still looking at them. And I'll put a link for you so you can see who the other nominees are. And I'm really hoping that some of you will get out there and take a look at the other blogs as well. There are just some really wonderful sites, many of which I had never heard of before, and which is why I'm mentioning them. There are several categories for you to take a look at, and this, again, as I said, was for the Family Tree Magazine 2011 Best Genealogy Blogs, and the categories are just as fascinating as are the blogs themselves. And you can vote multiple times, but this is not a really a plea for votes. It's a plea for you to go and visit these wonderful blogs. There's sort of, well, as I said, several categories. One is sort of an everything category where people talk about everything genealogical. And some of those are well known, some I had heard about and have been following for some time, but quite a few I'd never heard of before. And I was just really excited to see them. And I urge you to go and click on them, read them. They are wonderful sites. There's a category of blogs for those who focus on burial sites, on cemeteries, and that's kind of a neat thing too. Now, I had heard of a couple like the Association of Graveyard Rabbits, but just some other things I hadn't heard of. Tombstone territory. Now, many of us sort of know that as a term from the West, but this is a cemetery blog, and it's just really kind of a neat thing. Just fabulous, fabulous things there that I had never heard of before. There's a whole technology category, and trust me, after even the voting for this competition for the top 40 blog is over, I'm still going to be visiting each and every one of these blogs. Technology is something that is becoming more and more critical for those of us who visit cemeteries, who are interested in learning about the actual homestead where our ancestors lived. And here are some wonderful sites. There are at least 10 or 12 sites that were nominated in that technology category and how to use them. I know I'm very interested in learning how to use GPS in technology, but there are far greater tools beyond that that are there. And I am learning so much. And trust me, it's a steep learning curve. There's so many things I don't know. And I'm excited to see some of these blogs that are nominated. What's also neat, when you go to one blog, I also like to see the blogs that they also follow. So, you know, wow, an entire world has opened up for me. There is a heritage groups category, and some of which I already knew, and I was happy to see some of my favorite folks were nominated. I'm excited to look at things that I've never heard of before. And particularly those that are focusing on other countries. One I just, you know, just happened to mention, it just caught my eye. And just looking at Scottish immigration and Acadian and French Canadian culture and history and just what people are doing. One blog I thought just had a really cute name. It's focusing on Irish family research, and I think it's called Help the Fairy Folks Hid My Ancestors. Well, we know what it's like when we're researching ancestors that we think have been hidden or have been hiding. And I'm just really excited, the things that I've really been able to see in those categories. There are the categories of the research or the how-to people have been nominated, and that's kind of fun to see. Again, some of the folks I've never really heard of. I've heard of some of the people didn't realize that they had a blog. So it's like, oh my gosh, my eyes have been opened. And as I said, I am going to put a link for you on the podcast site so you can visit these sites as well. Don't just go and click on somebody that you know. Really use this as an opportunity, as a launching pad to explore these new sites. And if you see a site that attracts your attention, also go back and see who they're following and see who they're paying attention to and who they're linking to from their blog as well. I've learned so much in this past week, and it's just been really good. There's a local regional category, and yes, I do have to stop and take a minute for a little bit of shameless self-promotion. I was very honored that my blog, My Ancestor's Name, was nominated in that category. Wow, what an honor. Thank you, whoever is out there, for the nomination. And if you are so inclined, feel free to vote for my blog as well. But that's not why I blog. I just feel that there's some interesting stories that I can share. But I was impressed to see some of the other sites that are in that category. There are a lot of historical societies, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I'm nominated in a category with historical societies. But you know what? Look at those society blogs. They are fascinating. They have some really neat links, not just to events that they have, but also just interesting things that can open other doors for you. And who knows, you might be researching some of these regions that these society blogs really cover. So that's kind of a neat. There is a really neat category called New Blogs, and they cover everything from individuals who are journeying into their past. Have you seen my roots? I was kind of intrigued at seeing that. And the names of these blogs are wonderful because sometimes I share that sentiment, Pursuits of a Desperate Genie. I know how sometimes when I'm working on something and trying to solve a brick wall, it's like, oh gosh, I'm getting desperate here. So I just love seeing some of not just the names, but really the content. It's just really opened up my eyes to a lot more people who are out there whose sites I might not have seen before. And of course, the My Family History category, there is you know, a list of blogs, some of which I've seen before, and again, some which I haven't, but it's been really kind of neat just to see what's out there. I'm excited to see some people that I've also met lately, some of whom I met at the Family History Expo in Atlanta, and I'm glad to see some of their blogs are up there as well. And wow, the list is just amazing. There are over 112 or 13 or so blogs that are on that list. And trust me, this is just a smattering of the great genealogy blogs that are out there. And I'm also hoping that as you visit these sites, that those of you who don't have a blog will consider creating one. And trust me, you know, a year or so ago, I was having this similar conversation with Lucky Davis. Many of you know her from Our Georgia Roots, and she was the one who really encouraged me to consider blogging, and in terms of a traditional genealogy blog. And I finally began to get it. And now at this point, you know, two blogs later, I am just so appreciative of the things that I've learned from others. And I was beginning to learn a lot because I was following blogs. Began to realize, though, as I began to share some of my research stories, that I have had the privilege of just meeting so many fascinating researchers that are out there. And I just hope that those of you who are out there reading a lot will also start to write and start to share your stories. Because face it, we all have the stories. We know the feeling of euphoria we got when we first found that first ancestor on a historical document, whether it was a census record or whether it was a Dawes card or whether it was an Eastern Cherokee application or whatever was your first document. It may have been something that you found in your house. You may have found an old marriage certificate or that named a previous generation that you didn't know about. Sometimes these things are just so insightful and leading you to the previous generation, and it's like, wow. But I also know that special feeling the first time you go to the courthouse or the first time you go to the archives and you actually see the record there at the courthouse or in that ledger or on that census record, and you feel, you know, that, oh my gosh, this history can actually be explored a little bit more in depth, and that there is so much more, there's so many more stories to tell. And you know that feeling. Well, share those stories. You know, the genealogist loves to hear another genealogist talk about those feelings and talk about those discoveries, and you can do that too. So I'm hoping that as you look at the list of people who have been nominated, you're going to be inspired to create one. And this is very interesting because I was recently asked about a week and a half ago if I would give a presentation on blogging at an upcoming genealogy meeting of my local genealogy society. And it's like, wow, this is so ironic. A year ago, someone was trying to convince me to blog, and now I'm going to be in a situation where I'm going to be giving a presentation on blogging, particularly in the sense of sharing part of my research experiences and how it's enhanced my own genealogical journey. So anyway, take a look. You have three more days to vote. Voting is going to end on the 20th. I do hope that you go and look at those blogs. It's been just really a fun thing for me to take a look at as well. Anyway, as I said, it's been an interesting week. And actually, as an offshoot of my blogging experience, I have another kind of story to share with you. About 2 weeks ago, I guess it was now, on my blog called My Ancestor's Name, and by the way, I didn't say it in my shameless self-promotion, my blog that has been nominated is called My Ancestor's Name, and I have a link for you on the podcast site. But about 2 weeks ago on that blog, I posted a story that had been shared with me about the story of a young infant in the middle of the Civil War who was found placed in a hollowed-out log for his protection. And this was the middle of the Civil War. It was a black child, And this infant was discovered by two children who lived not far from the Battle of Jenkins Ferry. And they ended up taking this infant home. And the child for several years was reared in this household by this white family. And his own history was, of course, told to him as he got older. And the story itself ended with him eventually meeting one of the men who ended up saving his life, essentially. Well, I blogged about that and got just a warm response from many people. And as a result, some friends in Arkansas and became also interested in the story. And I will give a shout out to one of my colleagues in Arkansas, Carla Coleman. Thank you. Hello. But she particularly became interested, as have others, in the story. And one of the things that I asked in that blog post was, Jane, can we find descendants? Can we find out a little bit more about the history of that community? Descendants of the young child who did live to be an adult, who did talk about for many years his experiences that he heard about his youth and about his having been found during the days of the Jenkins Ferry battle. And could descendants of the people who also found him be told? Well, my colleague became interested. She's a genealogist. She's a researcher. And has possibly found some descendants. We're still working on that to confirm that. But she became interested in the history in the community where this story was told. And the incident took place in what is now Grant County, Arkansas. And she recently visited a museum where some of the history of the community has been captured. And interestingly enough, and this is kind of, I'm not even sure what my feeling is as I tell this part of the story. It's not a great feeling because some of it, it's like, oh no, they didn't do that to this story. But the story of Thomas McElroy is known, and it is reflected in the museum for that county. But what's disappointing is how old Tom, or as he was, I guess, known in the latter years of his life, was depicted. And in the museum, and this is Grant County, Arkansas, there is a sort of a, I guess it's a mannequin, and I don't know if it's a child in this mannequin figure or not, but a black child is depicted wearing a gray Civil War uniform with not a weapon of any kind, but a rope. Yes, I said a rope in his hand. Now, number one, this was a person who was a victim. He was a child. He was an abandoned child who was discovered by two other children in the middle of the forest, of the woods surrounding Jenkins Ferry. He was a victim. This was not a child who was old enough to have been a soldier on either side of a battle. But Thomas is depicted as a child wearing a gray uniform, a uniform we know he did not wear. And then, of course, a rope. And this is a community where 100 years ago, less than 100 years ago, it was known as a sundown community. And those of you who know the history of many towns in the South, what a sundown town meant, and I won't go into all of that, but a rope. This child in a gray uniform carrying a rope is how he's depicted in a museum behind a glass case. And yes, I was disappointed to see it. There was a sign indicating that that's who this is depicting. And a small little sign briefly telling a story on sort of what had happened. And I guess I began to ask the question, okay, what should the reaction be? Should this be something that, oh my gosh, look what these folks have done depicting or trivializing the history of something that happened? Or is it an opportunity? And a lot of times I think that things that we sometimes see as insensitive are really opportunities. Opportunities for us to grow. Opportunities for us to teach others correctly. And as I've had several conversations with my colleague Carla, this is an opportunity for us as sons and daughters and people whose history lie lies on the terrain, on the landscape. It's an opportunity for us to tell the story from our perspective as well. And perhaps Thomas McElroy's story might be that he is perceived only to have been someone to be just kind of trivialized and presented in a whimsical way. Well, perhaps it's time to tell the story. Interestingly enough, I did ask, well, were there other depictions of African-American history and heritage and contributions to the county at the museum? And she did share with me the fact that there was a story of a woman who was had been enslaved in Alabama, who, for whatever reason, had attacked her slave mistress in Alabama and had killed her, and she was later executed for her crime. Okay. I'm trying to follow and connect this to Central Arkansas. And the fact is that that's all there was. It was a story of Phoebe, this poor enslaved woman who, for whatever reason, attacked and killed her mistress and was executed for the crime of murder. Well, this is an Alabama story. What does that have to do with the history and heritage of people in the county of Grant County, Arkansas? Well, apparently the family later moved to Grant County, and somebody went to witness the execution of poor Phoebe the slave, and here in a museum in Central Arkansas is a little sign showing this woman being led to her execution in Alabama. Farewell, Phoebe. It's kind of like, aha, you know, this one didn't make it. But wow, this is a museum reflecting the history of a county. And this story is not even a county story. Well, it's an opportunity for us to do a little bit better to tell the story. Also was depicted, apparently, a woman who was a slave in that county, in Grant County, and her headstone was there. A woman called Harriet, who died in the 1850s, who apparently was one of the few, if the only, slave burial that was known to exist in the county. But my question is, why is her headstone there? There was a brief story saying her descendants, of course they were not named, and would they even be known since there was no surname attached to Harriet? But there was an image of actually a beautiful hand-carved stone depicting Harriet. Here is the original stone in the museum, as opposed to being on her final resting place. The story is that all her descendants said it was okay, and they created another monument for her. Okay. Well, I won't go there, but I guess I still see all of this. The depiction of old Tom in a gray uniform holding a rope. Okay, it's probably time to tell Thomas McElroy's story more accurately. And thankfully, there are McElroy descendants who are asking questions. Oh, is this our ancestor? We're from Central Arkansas. Could this be part of our history that we don't know? And I'm glad to hear that that's being addressed. The story of the poor slave woman who was executed, well, obviously something led her to that level of rage that she would have murdered someone, and this is far years before. Certainly the family who was related to the woman who had been killed before they migrated to Arkansas, but this is not an Arkansas story even. So why is it there? And then, of course, here's the stone of Harriet, an enslaved woman from the county, and it's a beautiful headstone, is there. Well, it's probably time for us now to take responsibility to tell our stories. Very clearly, the stories of the population and the contributions that the population from the African-American community made to that county are not known by perhaps the curators of the museum, but there are individuals who know some facts. It was shared with me recently that someone had written a small piece, a small article, about the African American communities in Grant County. And these are parts of the county that are not on any map. They were known to the people who lived there. And there are several communities. Milltown, which was basically a settlement built around a sawmill in Sheridan that, you know, this small population lived there during the 1920s. And as the local people will say, well, this is before they were run out of the town and before these places became sundown towns. Nida, a community that was settled by former slaves and their descendants after the Civil War. There was a school there. There was a church. There were several dwellings. And it's interesting because Nida, or Nidia, N-Y-D-I-A, can't be found on a map, but a person who had documented this community talked about the families that lived there, the Pumphreys, the Poles, the Knolls, the Henson, the Hankins, the Kinneys, the Allison Smiths, the McElroys, the Jones, the Andersons, Wilsons, Odoms, the Sumners, the Browns, and the Franklins. Well, in 1900, I found some of these families. They were living in what was called Fenter Township, doesn't exist now, but among the local African American population, it was called Nida. And you'll find people who had relatives who died in the 1980s and 1990s. And on their funeral programs, it'll say that the deceased was born in Nida. And so these were communities that thrived, that had an identity. And these families had a school. They had a church. These were not people whose history should be reflected as slaves or descendants of slaves being executed in Alabama, or individuals who are, you know, carrying ropes, wearing gray uniforms. These are people who lived in dignity. There was another community in the same area, Oxner, 2 miles north of a junction between Highway 35 and Highway 190. You know, wow, it had a school. A country school in the 1900s. That history is gone, and it's not reflected in the museum that housed these very towns. Red Quarters. Apparently, this was an area which was basically a settlement. It wasn't a town, but this is what the local African-American people referred to this town of homes where people who worked for the Williams Mill in Sheridan lived. Again, it's known by some as Red Quarters. Others called it Upper Quarters. And of course, once they were run out and this area became a sundown town, they had no ties to that land. There was also Schuller, a black community east of Sheridan Hill. There was, which was, you know, a mile east of Heaton Chapel. And a church, the Grapevine Church of God in Christ, was there. You know, these are people who lived in dignity, whose lives should not be trivialized. Stoudmire, which was a logging camp, but it had a school that was there. And again, it's an opportunity. And the opportunity is for us to tell a story. Winston Settlement, which was somewhere between Heaton Chapel and another little community, and somewhere around Sheridan Hill. Again, before the families were run out, people thrived there and lived with dignity. They were poor, yes, but there is no dishonor in the poverty in which they lived. But it is important that their lives are told, and not as mere, quote-unquote, slaves, not as people to be trivialized for their execution, and not as people whose headstones were removed and plopped behind a glass case, suggesting that their final resting places were disturbed. Bookman, again, another community, and believed to have been populated by people who were once enslaved. These are places where people lived, and you know, it's an opportunity. It's an opportunity for us to tell our story. And the lesson to be learned, certainly from the story of Thomas McElroy, is that we need to address our history and to tell it with dignity so we won't have caricatures appearing, holding ropes and where a museum that's, you know, going to reflect things from perhaps a hanging culture or a lynching culture, or one in which the people, the men, the women, and the children who lived on the soil are reflected. And this is our responsibility to tell that story. And there have been some efforts, but it suggests that we have some things that we need to get busy doing. And I'm hoping that the lessons that have been learned by my colleagues who've been visiting these communities, and yes, who took note of the fact that, gee, I wonder why the police car came to circle the area because we were at the museum. You know, maybe, maybe not. But there are lessons. And the lesson learned is that, you know, we've got to tell our own stories. That is our task. That is our challenge. Take a lesson learned from the blogs. Take a lesson learned from the wonderful stories that other people are doing and the wonderful ways in which people are reflecting their stories. Start to document those cemeteries. Go back and look at that voting ballot and look and see how many people are documenting cemeteries and telling those stories so well. And hopefully by doing that and documenting those cemeteries, we won't see the gravesite of Harriet disturbed by, you know, this beautiful stone now just resting behind a glass case, that her rest, she continues to rest in peace with her gravesite being appropriately marked. These are our responsibilities. And as we start to head for the next year, maybe this is how we plan our goals for the next year, to make that commitment to honor our ancestors so we can call their names and we can honor where they rest and visit those sites. We have a lot of things to do. We've got to get busy. And I'm at least happy that some of these things have gotten us all excited. And from that, we can grow and we can document the stories. We can protect their resting places. And what we're doing is hopefully giving all of us an opportunity to call out our ancestors' names. Anyway, I'll get off of my soapbox. Thank you all for listening. I appreciate you for being there. You know, I was supposed to have been on my way to Arkansas today, but the snow and the ice, pardon me, and the snowy roads kept us from traveling, and which is perhaps not a bad thing. And everything happens for a reason, and it provides us opportunities to do something else. But anyway, thank you all for listening. I will be coming to you next week on Christmas Day. And I wish you all the best. Happy holidays. Be safe. Have a great week of researching. And please continue to do what you do. Keep researching. Keep documenting. And please keep sharing what you find.